Well, you were just making a noise that I don't want you to make on the show because Okay, thank you.
That was practicing the trumpet. Things are good.
Oh,
things
that's what that was. That was trumpet practice. Oh,
there it is.
Thank you for not doing that on the show. I appreciate it. How's it going?
Okay. Things are good. Today, it feels like it's going to warm up. My entire property is covered with a sheet of ice. In fact, my housekeeper left yesterday, and she left out the back driveway, and then she called me about 5 minutes later, and as soon as I saw her call, I was like, she crashed into the gate. She said, I just crashed into your gate. I'm very sorry, but it's a little messed up. When you go out my back driveway, you go down a small hill, and then you got to make a semi-tight left turn. And when it's icy out, all the water runoff goes right across that part of the driveway. It's icy. So if it rains, the water will run and then it gets cold. So the minute you come over the bump, your momentum is to just keep sliding off track. And she did that and drove into my gate, which is totally fine. I mean, it's totally fixable. She cracked her grill. And so I went and got my small truck and I parked it there so nobody comes in or out. Because if the UPS guys come and then they lose momentum, they're going into the woods. She said the whole accident happened at like 1 mile per hour, which I totally believe her because it's happened to me. But so I'm really looking forward. All that to say, I'm really looking forward to this to wash away. Today it's a little warmer and it's a little rainy. So hopefully we get to see the gravel in the driveway again one day.
One day.
So, yeah. And then I have my anti-ice cleats that I've been walking around the property with. And it's to the point now where if I don't have them, I can't walk around. So I have to have them on every time I walk around.
Wow.
Yeah, it's tough. And I walk pretty far. I walk at least 10,000 steps a day going to and from the shop.
So you've been using them for a couple of weeks now.
Yeah.
Are they perfect as is? Any improvements that could be made?
Occasionally, I catch myself walking on my heels, and I get a little slippity-dippity on my heels. So if I was going to make them again or make another set, I probably would add a piece to the heel. So it would be the whole bottom of the foot. Because as I walk, I'm walking on the balls of my feet, so I'm like bouncing around on the front of my feet. But sometimes I forget, and I'll take a wider step onto something, and then your heel hits first naturally. And then I do a split, and then I get up, and I do a pirouette, and then I compose myself and walk away.
I can picture it.
That's why you should always have a camera running.
Yeah. They usually, it's funny. This is another funny story. So my friend who lives up here called me and said, he never calls me. We don't talk that frequently. He's an acquaintance and he's not a close friend, but we're friends. And I was in the city the other night for 5 minutes to go visit my friend Mike. So I drove down to the city and at 10 o'clock, I see a phone call from my friend, and I was like, why is he calling me? Something must be wrong. So, hey, what's up, dude? He goes, are you home? I go, no, why? Is everything all right? He goes, I'm pulled over by the state troopers right in front of your house, and I had a couple of drinks. He's questioning me, and he might let me go because I told him I could park my car and hang out at your house. I said, I happen to not be home at the moment. But be my guest. He goes, yeah, he wants to make sure that I really know who lives here. So he wants to talk to you. And with that, I opened my camera and I could see the whole incident happening on the side street of my house. I opened because I got cameras pointed in every direction. And I was like, I was with my other buddy. I go, look, this is what I'm talking about. And my buddy's pulled over on the side of the road. And so Ryan happened to be nearby. So Ryan came over and talked to the cops and my buddy, he was not over the legal limit. He did have to do a test and blow right there on the street, but he was under the legal limit. He only had one or two drinks and wasn't enough to consider being drunk legally. Mm-hmm. And the cop had to let him go. So he hung out at my house for a little while. I didn't see him. By the time I got home, he was gone. But technology's funny. This little incident was happening near my house. So I opened up my cameras and sure as hell, there he was on the side of the road talking. And then they all came in the back driveway where it's icy. And I could see that camera, looking at that camera. They were all standing there talking, the two guys and the cop. But modern technology. I was 150 miles away watching the incident.
That's pretty wild.
Funny.
But that's about as exciting as it got. It's snowy there, but I was just looking at the weather here, and it's going to be 80 degrees tomorrow.
Oh, my goodness.
You lucky sucker.
That's crazy.
It's been consistently cold, but today, I believe it's March 4th, 37, so it's only going to get warmer today, so that's great. But it's just treacherous out there. This is kind of almost worse when it's this icy, and then it starts to melt, and it gets icy with a little bit of water on top. That's when you really have to be careful. That's when you really need your cleats. But besides that, I've just been working on clay all week. I was telling you guys before we got started, I've been really experimenting with clay. My patrons got to see some of it, and I'm not really filming any of it. What I'll probably do is there's one or two processes that I might do for a video next week that involve the CNC. And so I've been really experimenting and running tests. So when I do that video, I'll just do an overview of what I've been working on, but not necessarily filming any of it until I'm confident that it's going to work on camera. So it's been a real education, and I dug in. I really started playing around with pottery in 2021, and I have clay sitting around that's still soft, but I don't have any notes on it. I don't know what is what. So this morning, I was joking before we started, I know what clay is cone 6 and what clay is cone 06, because I put it all in the same kiln at the same temperature, and some of it is burnt like cookies. Burnt like chocolate chip cookies, which is, it's all tests, so it's nothing critical. I didn't break or lose anything severe. But it's just the education and the chemistry and the science behind the clays, the potteries and the glazes are becoming a little bit more clearer to me. And that's what this pottery class that I've been taking every Friday morning is really helping me with. So when I'm alone,
are you keeping a log of that stuff or anything?
I take a lot of pictures. So it's funny. This morning when I realized what I did wrong, when I realized what clay was what, I went back and I looked, and then a little bit of ChatGPT, some screen grabs, and the difference between low fire clay, medium ranges, and high ranges. You know, I hear people say that all the time. I didn't know what any of that means. Now I do, with a little bit more clarity. And I went and bought clay the other day, and my teacher and his whole class, everything is all cone 10. So I'm going to start experimenting with cone 10 so I can kind of be on the same level with him. So I went and bought cone 10 clay. I bought some cone 10 glazes. Some of them's coming in the mail. But it's exciting to see when you hit it on the mark. So I opened the kiln this morning, and I sent you guys a picture. Two of like the 7 or 8 things hit the mark, and it's really nice to see like, oh, okay, now I know how and what to do. And what to expect. So I'll probably be doing another firing in the next day or so. And I'm just experimenting. I don't have a pottery wheel yet, but I'm experimenting with a lot of hand building. So I've been making a few things and just experimenting with that. And I saw my patrons and the people who use clay are going to understand what I'm talking about. There's a little breakthrough that happened for me this week. It's when you do hand building, which is basically just hand making anything out of clay and you're not using the wheel. I always had a very difficult time using clay because it's too soft. It doesn't push back enough. I really prefer to carve versus squishing things together, which some people, that's all they know how to do, and they do it really beautifully well. I was never good at focusing an object or a shape when it's super soft. But I'm starting to realize there's the trim phase where you make something on the wheel, you let it dry for a day, or at least you let it dry slowly for a day and still damp, but it's hard enough to be able to carve. And then it carves like soap. And then that stage, which I come to realize is really, really fun. That's where I really like that stage where you sculpt something, let it dry until it becomes hard like soap. And it's certainly not ready to be kiln dried at all, but it's certainly ready to be shaped. And I'm really having a lot of fun in that stage. And when I first started playing with clay in the year 2021, 22, I didn't know enough to let clay do that. I just was trying to work in that super soft, squishy stage, and it was too frustrating. And I didn't know enough. And I was trying to create finished objects in that squishy, shapey, gooey stage, and I just couldn't do it. And so that's the main reason I just said, I can't do this. I'm not good at it. And I didn't learn the wheel yet the way I know now. I don't have my own, but I use it at the studio, my teacher's studio, and I'm getting past the mump, which is nice, where, you know, every time I put something on there, I'm going to get something that I'll at least be okay with. So anyway, that's been my experience. It's been a lot of breakthroughs, and the only way you can get to breakthroughs is to just tinker and experiment and keep the camera off in some cases.
You enjoying the camera being off?
Yeah, because I'm not worrying about it. And I have a pair of Metas, so when I go to class, and I've been filming stuff at the class just because there's a total transformation, and I also am filming the wheel, which I don't have an opportunity to use here yet. And but when I get home, my Metas have like thumbprints goo all over the button, and my camera's all gooeyed up with clay thumbprints and stuff.
How are you at, both of you actually, at retaining new information as you get older? You know, because when we're younger, it's easier to learn things as your brain is still forming. And as you get older, it gets a little harder. And I have totally noticed this in myself.
Yeah, yeah. I have a very specific thing that I have to remind myself. Maybe there's a poster here or a bumper sticker. I didn't know it at all when I first did it. And I got through it. So this happens to me all the time with machines and CNCs and things that I haven't used in a long time. I remind myself, I knew nothing about it the day I got it, and I was able to get results. With that experience somewhere in the vault and a new access to the machine, or at least I have to pull it out of storage and get it going again and remember the software and the procedures, it always comes back to me. Even if I haven't kept it in the front of my brain, it's there, because I always remind myself, I knew nothing about it and I was successful. Now I have that experience and I'm going at it again. I could pretend I know nothing about it and still be successful. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally does.
Inarticulate the way I said that, but
it's just how you approach it.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you asked that, because I was reading something this morning about reading and about how, and I don't remember the four steps, but there were four steps of reading something. And it was like the first time you read it, you see it and you hear it and you don't really keep any of it, you know, for the most part, if it's something new or something deep that you need to like think through. The second time you begin to get repeated things that you remember, you're like, oh yeah, I remember that from last time. Like something did stick, this little word here, or this thought here, or this whatever. And then the third time you can go through, and like I said, I don't know what these four things actually are. I'm just making them up. The third time is like you get meaning out of it. And then the fifth time or the fourth time you walk away from it going like, oh, how did that thing affect me? What did I take with me from reading it? But the point being, instead of doing something one time and then being disappointed that you didn't get out of it or hold on to what you wanted to hold on to, you intentionally do something four times in a row. You read the same thing four times in a row or within a day, so that you get the chance to go through those progressions. And so in reading that and thinking about it, I was applying that to like what we do and doing things for the first time skill-wise. And say, yeah, oftentimes I will do something on camera and then, you know, the video's over and then I don't do it again for 6 months or a year or whatever or ever. And it got me thinking about, well, what if I were to shoot a video, learn how to do a thing on camera and then turn the camera off, but then spend the rest of the day just redoing that thing? Not to redo the final product, but the process, you know, like what if I were to weld more because I don't need to, but because it teaches me that repetition and do that thing multiple times for the next day or so that I can get different things out of it. I can hold on to different parts of it longer. And so that's actually been on my mind. And I was thinking about how to implement that.
I mean, that's exactly how a brand identity works. You know, it's that you're getting familiar with something. You see something over and over again. And then there's this perceived, value to that because you've seen it multiple times. And I've heard, you know, the gurus will say, you know, when making YouTube videos, that person might not subscribe the first time they see you, but then they come across you again, and then that third time they get to know you and they'll subscribe. And so I don't know what I think. I would just be totally lost as a human being without the internet, because I'm constantly referencing stuff that I should already know, especially like software stuff. Like every time.
Convenience. The convenience of the internet has forced us not to remember phone numbers and not to remember.
And maybe that's it. Maybe I would be fine always if there available. Was no internet. But yeah.
I used to remember 20 phone numbers. Now I can't even remember one.
True. Was going to say, yeah, I think it creates its own problems in a way, you know, because you, I don't know, this is like probably a whole topic in and of itself, but I don't think our brains are made to be able to have access to all of the things, the amount of information and the amount of the immediacy of everything that we actually have now. It's great, and we use it for all sorts of stuff, but I don't think that's what we're made to be able to handle. So, you know, we're creating a problem by giving too much input, and then sometimes we get disappointed in ourselves because we can't handle all the input. I'm like, I don't know. You know, anyway, that's a whole thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think to your original question, for me, I do have a harder time at this point in life remembering the really small details, the numbers around, like, what setting should this thing be at or whatever. And I don't know that that's because I'm older and it's harder to remember numbers. I think it's because as you get older, for me anyway, you start to prioritize, like, where do I care enough about something to remember? And where have I learned that I don't actually have to remember this thing? I can go look it up. I can figure it out again or whatever. And so, and I think the phone numbers are the same, are a good example of that. Like, your brain says, I don't need to remember that because it's so easy to get it again that I, you know, so I think I do that with a lot of, like, software things, tools that I don't ever use. You know, it's like, I know that I can find it again, so I don't have to.
Yeah, well, I will constantly say, okay, I need to remember this. And then I don't. It's like, you know, like, oh, I'm going to set my keys on the coffee table. I'm going to remember that I set my keys. And then the next day I can't find my keys. That's a very typical thing. The hacks for me is if I say something out loud, like I need to use this setting for this particular task. And I have to say it out loud or write it down. And if I do one of those things, it for some reason, it just sticks.
Yeah, I take a lot of pictures. I'm remembering now, was with the old plasma table, even the new one, but not as much. But the old plasma table had a lot of procedures. It was like ticking off in an airplane. There was a lot of procedures to remember. And every time I'd come up to it, and I'd use it every day for a week, and then I wouldn't use it for 10 months. And then I'd come up to it after 10 months and be like, what? And that's when I had to say, you did it the last time. And you didn't remember it then. I have to remind myself and encourage myself to slowly figure it out again. And the new machine isn't quite as complicated, and there isn't as many procedures to get going. But it still comes up. And I used to have that also all the time with the Tormach, which I ended up giving to a friend. He's going to use it in his shop. But the Tormach, which it's the reason why I didn't use it as much as I probably should have. Which is it was a machining, CNC machining device, but more metal machining. Every time you come up to it, there's literally a pre-flight procedure that is just impossible. So many subtle things to remember, offsets and this and that. And I was like, I forget it. I'll just go use my other CNC machine.
Which just do it on the bandsaw.
That's why I started carving aluminum and brass in the other machines, because they're just so much easier to get to. And it's the same thing. If I was going to cut steel, I would probably just change my project to something that could work without steel. There's a lot of times
we
that
talked about
when you come up against the material choice in a machine and you're like, that's another topic.
Yeah. I remember we talked about this a couple of months ago, and we talked about having a kind of a, pre-flight checklist kind of thing at tools, you know, and there were a few people, and I don't remember the details of their emails, but we had a few people email through Patreon about that topic and saying, like, yeah, at work, you know, under these machines, there is a clipboard there with everything you need to know that you don't remember to come back and use that tool safely or whatever. And that is certainly a good idea. I think it would be something that I still would like to implement around the shop. Originally, I was thinking having a notebook with all of that stuff in it, you know, so that, like, this page was this tool. But I actually think that is another friction point for me, which is why I never moved on it. I think those need to be at the tool. They need to be in your way before you even can use the tool, so that you're confronted with, here's what you don't remember, you know, it's right here. And then you see it, and then you can move on to the thing. Oh, David is sliding back and pulling something off the wall.
So I've been, I use a lot of blank playing cards for mm-hmm. my notes. And I really wish I could print on these cards. Because my notes kind of get messy and they're not, if I see a sticky note on the wall, it doesn't register to me as like a thing that I should read. It just registers as like, that was a scribble that I made a while ago. And so I have been printing on shipping labels and then sticking them to these blank playing cards. Cool. And then,
That's what I was going to suggest.
A puncture, a hole in there. And then I've got a board. I just threw it. I got a board behind me where I hang them on. Those are all future projects. And I want to do this throughout the shop on the tools as like that little pre-flight thing. Investors, rich people, people with lots of money, come up with some sort of printer that just prints little playing card sizes. Yeah.
Well, okay. So there is a thing that we got my daughter for Christmas, and it may not be exactly the same thing, but it's a small printer that's maybe 3 inches square or something. And it comes with an app for your phone, and basically it prints out little stickers. And the stickers, I think, are maybe 2 inches square or something like that. So there's probably something similar to that that mm-hmm. prints out Post-it sized sticky things that would kind of accomplish the same thing. So there's probably, if there's that, then there's probably a playing card printer somewhere. Right. You know, that's my guess, but yeah, that's cool. That's a good idea. David, what have you been working on? What have you been doing?
I've been making a mess, like a huge mess. So I got a couple of cookies, walnut cookies that are, when they stand upright, they're almost, my head just barely peeks over. So they're like 4.5 feet tall. And it takes two people to move them because they're like 6-7 inches thick.
Wow.
They were given to me for some art projects, but they're all rough cut chainsaw or some sort of very rough mill and way too big for my CNC to flatten them. So I made a slab flattening jig with linear guide rails, and I thought about you, Bob. I did the thing where I didn't do a lot of research in what it takes to make it.
I'm glad that people think of me in that sense.
In a good way, though, because
that's awesome.
It's such a good thing to do, because you learn so much more instead of just following step by step instructions. And so I saw a couple photos and like, oh yeah, it makes sense. I need linear guide rails that go this way. And then I need two guide rails that go this way. And it's a big etch-a-sketch. And so I made it and I ran into some issues. I filmed it and everything. And I figured out what the issues were. Everything was pretty solvable except for dust collection. I'm still working on that. And I can now flatten huge slabs. And so we finally got it dialed in yesterday and we flattened the first one, and man, it makes such a mess because we're flattening end grain. And look, if it was long grain, it would create little chips running around over, but end grain is dust only. And so I've got dust collection on there, but it was not very good. And so we did that, just covered the entire shop with walnut dust everywhere, but it works really good. I'm really, really happy with it. And I thought I was done with the video, but now I'm kind of like working on some upgrades to make it even better. And I think that will make the video even better. So yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Awesome. So are you going to talk about what these cookies are going to be used for yet, or is that future art
stuff? I have a couple ideas. They're not concrete. So one, it's oval shaped for the most part. And I am thinking, and it's got the, it's got a live edge all the way around it. And I'm thinking if I just do an offset of that by maybe 3 or 4 inches and hollow that out. I haven't figured out how to do that. Maybe a sawzall. I don't know if it can cut 5-6 inches deep. Maybe that's a question I'll ask you guys a little bit later, but basically offset the outside, remove the middle. That middle piece is going to be used in a future project, and then put a I want to get a piece of metal that fills in the inside and shape it, hammer it in some sort of way, and then have that chromed by a local plating place, and then make a big metal base for it. So it is, it will be like a human size sculpture, like 5-6 feet tall. And that's what I'm envisioning for that. And then the other one, BM Sculptures made a video a couple weeks ago. Are you guys familiar with that channel?
No. No.
Oh man, he just makes these wood and epoxy sculptures.
We were on the show together making.
Oh, that's yeah. He's so good. He made this walnut table that looks like it has a little mountain coming out of one side of it. Oh, so he just took a basically like a cookie, but then laminated walnut on there from flooring, and then carved a mountain into it. And then the rest of it was a table. When I saw that, I was like, oh, but wouldn't it be cool if that mountain was actually a waterfall? And then where he had a table was actually the lake the waterfall went into. And so that's the piece that I cut out of the first one will be used to make that waterfall into the second one. And of course, I'll reference him and say this is where the inspiration came from. But I haven't done any kind of like epoxy river table type thing, but I thought this would be cool if I can make it look like a waterfall going into a lake. So that's what I'm thinking.
Wow. Blake McFarlane.
Lake, is that something I should look up?
Like, no, Blake McFarlane, BM Sculptures.
Oh, Blake McFarlane.
I thought you said lake. Yeah, I'm like, is that a famous lake?
A mumble.
It's got special water or something? I don't know.
Yeah, no, Blake was on Making It. With me. He didn't win, but he made it far and we got to be friends, and he's naturally talented sculptor who sculpts animals and figurines and resin and wood sculptures.
Funny thing about his last video, he's using an Arbortech power chisel, and I have the Arbortech like turbo planes and a couple other attachments for their whole system. But he's using a power chisel, and I was like, oh, I need one of those. And it was one of those, I stopped the video. I ordered the power chisel, went back to the video. Nice. And in my two videos ago, I did a like cleaning the shop, getting rid of tools I don't need. And I got rid of two angle grinders that I didn't need anymore. And I thought I was just ordering the power chisel attachment for the angle grinder. I actually ended up ordering the power chisel with another angle grinder. So
it's better to have it dedicated anyway. You'll use
it. It really is. I'll have, so when I'm doing these power carvings, I'll have one with the chisel end on it and another one with like the turbo plane or some other attachment. So it'll make life easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
I'm looking at him carving the mountain that you mentioned.
Yeah. I actually paused the video, took a screenshot and sent it to a friend. I'm like, I want to do this, but a waterfall.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool.
I'm going to have to watch it later because the thumbnail is pretty killer on that. Well, let's see. For me, I've been working on the building. We've had a lot of rain, so I've kind of been on and off out there. But I added gutters and downspouts to the pool house, which was way easy. Like, I don't know. I'm not sure what I expected. I didn't expect it to be hard or anything, but I just didn't know anything about it. I had only looked at the gutters and downspouts on my house, and that was like my research was like, oh yeah, it's made of those pieces. So I just ordered those pieces and I got pretty close. I had to buy a few extra things, but it was actually really easy to put up, and they drain well and it runs off in the right way. And, you know, I don't know, it looks nice. And so that was,
I should
cool.
hire you, because whoever did our gutters a couple of years ago didn't get some of the angles right.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I was doing one piece across one face, you know, so I can imagine that if you're going around things and making corners and stuff like that, maybe it's more difficult, but basic gutters are easy. I'll say that. How about that?
Okay.
My gutters are like 30 foot long flower.
You cannot hire me to come do your gutters because I won't do it.
I'll say my gutters are like flower boxes. They're like 30 feet long on each side of the house.
Oh, yeah.
Full of weeds.
But anyway, that was pretty cool. Just, it's like a finishing, it feels like a finishing touch kind of, you know, on the building. And then I added a light over the door, which I haven't tried yet because there's no electrical going into the building, so I don't have anything to plug it to. I think I might end up just like temporarily wiring it to an extension cord and plugging it in because I want to see what it looks like lit up, you know, on the front of the building. But those were done. And then the third thing in that video is going to be building a cedar like slatted screen to go in front of where the pool equipment is. So when you look at the front of the building, the short roof is over the pool equipment on the side of the building. And so the whole idea has been to have a screen on the front to hide that stuff. And then on the side of the building around the corner, I may end up putting a screen door, the same stuff, but some sort of sliding panels or door or something. So you really can't see it. But for the video, I'm just going to do something across the front. So that's the plan this afternoon, if it will stop raining, because it is still raining. yeah, so I've been working on those things. And I've got several different video, like really cool opportunities coming up with, I'm doing some stuff with Autodesk and a few other companies, and they're kind of extra videos, extra content than what I normally, the schedule that I normally put out. And they're good things that I want to do. So I've taken them on, but now I'm looking at the next 2 months and going like, oh, I have a lot of extra stuff to do. Hmm. It's all good. It's not hard. It's just extra, you know? And so I'm trying to figure out how to schedule that stuff for myself. Figure out how to fit it all in and do it, you know, on the deadlines and all that stuff. So that's been new because I've just, you know, I keep my own schedule for so long. And so when I have outside things like that to fit in, it's just something to figure out. My second Fusion plugin got released this week. So it is in the, thank you. It's in the Autodesk App Store. It's called Default Parameters, in case anybody wants to check it out. It lets you set, there's a little window that will pop up in Fusion now when you install it, and you can create parameters that you use all the time, and then it will automatically add those to every new file that you open. So if you always have the same material thicknesses or radius or clearances or whatever, you know, you can just always have them there without having to recreate them or import them every time. And you look like you're about to make a joke, Jimmy. Go ahead.
No.
Oh, you had this look on your face like, here he comes. I'm just waiting for him to stop talking so I can.
No. Believe it or not, my buddy is texting me and the text is coming across the computer screen. So I'm just reading that.
Oh, gotcha.
He's being silly.
Anyway, so that plugin is out now, which is really cool. I like that one. I think it's useful. It'll be useful for me. I hope it's useful for other people, but that, and then, so this, you're talking about doing things off camera and you're doing a creative thing off camera, which is cool. I was working on a not creative, but useful thing off camera for my aquariums. So I'll try to shorten this because it's not terribly interesting, but it was interesting to me. When you have aquariums, the hardness of the water plays a lot into what animals can survive well in the water, what plants do well, how they grow. And so, you know, you a lot of times will have to change the parameters, the chemistry of the water to make it ideal for certain animals and plants. We have really hard water here and it works fine. I've always just used water out of the tap and conditioned it, and then just kind of the plants and animals usually adapt over time and it's not a big deal. Well, I started this small tank a while back and it has shrimp in it, these cherry red shrimp, with the idea of I want these shrimp to breed. And I've always wanted to have this little tank where the shrimp just create shrimp all the time. And there's these cool little, it's a cool little ecosystem. Well, it turns out that they will not breed if the water has a certain TDS, which is generally the hardness. It's not exactly the hardness, but don't yell at me, chemists. Generally, it's the hardness. So they need around like 150 to 200 TDS. Okay. Which doesn't mean anything. Didn't mean anything to me either until I ordered a little tester and tested the water. Turns out my water has like well over 400 TDS. So it's surprising that the shrimp are even alive. They're definitely not going to breed. Uh-huh. So that led me down this path of like, well, how do I combat that without going and buying, you know, bottles of distilled water and using bottles of distilled water to fill my fish tanks? Because that would be one solution. And the solution is reverse osmosis filters, which is a filter that you hook up to, you know, a lot of people will use it for drinking water to change the flavor, like demineralize drinking water so it doesn't taste a certain way. Anyway, so I did some research, found this one that has, in researching them, I found that the water you get out of it is a, like a, there's a proportion of how much good, new, clear water you get versus how much wastewater it's getting rid of with all of the minerals and stuff. And a lot of times you're wasting 3-4 times as much water as you get out of it to do this process, which is wasteful, obviously, and kind of a drag. So anyway, I did all this research. I found one that has a very low wastewater output, which you can use to like water plants and stuff. So I ordered this thing, waited for this to show up, and then I got this thing and realized this just creates water. And if I want it to put into like the fish tank, I have to put it in a container. But if I just put it into like a 5-gallon bucket, it's not going to give me very much. And I have to watch it. And like, I didn't plan ahead. So the last couple of days, I went and bought a 27-gallon trash can and built a 2x4 stand and put the trash can on it and put a spigot on the bottom of the trash can and then had to put a float on the inside of the trash can so it turns itself off when the water gets to a certain height. And then I had to move all this down to where the water is in the basement next to a sink so that the wastewater goes into the sink. And it was like not hard and not, I just didn't, I was like, yeah, I should just get an RO filter. That's no big deal. And I ordered it without thinking about everything else that you have to do after that. And so I did all that stuff the other day, and now I have a system that I have a garbage can full of water downstairs, and so when I want to go do a water change, this is all so that I can have extra shrimp. And these aren't shrimp you can eat. These shrimp are, like, smaller than the third end of your pinky. They are, like,
they're for less shrimp fried rice, the ones that are in shrimp fried rice.
Yeah, pretty much. They're really, really tiny ones. So, anyway, now I have this trash can that fills itself up with demineralized water. And so when I want to do a water change, I can take jugs down and open the spigot, fill them up, go up and put them into this, into the tanks, you know, to like lower the TDS. And I have to do that over time so that the animals and the plants can adjust to the water chemistry change. Anyway, the more and more I've been keeping tanks since I was in middle school, I think. But the more and more I've been into it in the last year or so, the more I'm finding like, oh, I never realized that I was not doing this or that I was doing this wrong, or I never even thought to test for so-and-so. And now I understand why it matters. And almost all of that has happened off camera. And I like that. I like the fact that I have felt zero pressure to try to make putting a trash can in my basement interesting. You know what I mean? It was just like, it's a thing I have to do to get this end result. Nobody has to know about it. It doesn't have to look like anything. It doesn't have to serve another purpose. It's just, I'm going to go do the thing and it's done. So I've been working on that stuff lately.
The reason I haven't really been filming any of the clay experimentation is because I just want to focus on the learning. I just want to focus on just developing experience and knowing what to expect. And that's the thing, is knowing, like this morning I opened the kiln, I'm like, okay, why did I get a burnt cookie? Okay, I got a burnt cookie because this is terracotta clay. This isn't, because I had bags of clay. I don't know what is what. I didn't write notes on anything like an idiot, but going forward, I'll be more studious and more attentive to detail like that, because it's obviously important to get good results. And that's really the primary, is just, I don't want to get bogged down with worrying about. And then the other thing is I don't want to waste my time filming things when I'm not going to get great results, or at least it's just, I'm just focusing on the learning. When I get to a point where I can confidently do X, Y, Z, the next procedure is X, Y, Z, X, Y, Z. And then I have results that I can count on. Then I can say, this took me 10 tries and now I got it here. Here's a quick synopsis of photographs of the failures to get to this point. And that'll tell the story, and I could still focus on the learning. I definitely do want to do what I started experimenting with this week is taking a photograph, bringing it into Vectrix, turning it into the selection on the menu is bitmap to model. You take a bitmap and you turn it into a model, and then it reads the highs and lows or the lights and darks and turns them into highs and lows, and you immediately create a model of a photograph. So you can take a picture of somebody, make it a low relief, like an image on a coin, for instance. It's a low relief model. And playing with the settings, somehow I clicked a button and all of a sudden the image became inversed. So I took a picture of a tombstone, brought it in. It was a gray picture because it wasn't a very high contrast picture. So I got a sketchy result, but it was just learning. I was like, let me go through the process. And somewhere along the way, I clicked and the image that was a positive image to carve became a negative image to carve. And I was like, oh, perfect. I'll carve the negative image in MDF, push clay into it. And then now my clay is a positive image straight away. I don't have to go to plaster or anything. I'm also starting to realize using MDF for molds is a lot like using plaster. So I could CNC into MDF and it has the same moisture wicking capacity as some clays.
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah. I haven't literally poured any slip into it. Slip is like milk clay and then it soaks in and then you empty it out. So I haven't really tried any MDF as with the slip, but just pushing soft clay into it, it lets it go right away because the moisture gets sucked out of it. Some things you stick on clay, wet clay like glass, and it sticks. You try to pull it apart, it won't let go. But if you're sticking it into something porous like MDF or plaster, it wicks away the wet surface right at the touch, and then you're able to pull it away. And that's what I'm realizing MDF does. So I was able to take my image with the iPhone, bring it into Vectrix, turn it into a model, make the model a negative model, CNC it with a really fine tip into MDF, stick clay into it, pull the clay off, have a positive image of what was my photograph 10 seconds ago. Well, 3 hours ago. And now I have a clay. The clay dries. I bisque it, which means that you low fire it to get it hard. Then you put the glaze on it. Then you fire it. And now in the kiln, the two of those tile experiments. And again, they're just experiments because my picture was not contrasty enough to give me really deep results. But I wanted to go through it anyway. And I need to go re-photograph some of these now with this new technology in mind. So I photographed them with a nice contrast. And that is going to be my procedure for my next CNC video. But at the same time, I get to play with clay. But I still want to exploit this concept of taking the tombstones and turning them into tiles. And either the tombstones themselves or really the predominant imagery on them. And that's what I did this week. So I could say, I'm going to send you guys pictures of some of that stuff. But to me, even after all the stuff we've been exposed to, this week, I had that feeling of, I can't believe that this is possible to take a picture of something, turn it into a 3D model in Vectrix with the click of two buttons, and then carve it. And then you have a 3D image and a piece of material. Whereas I remember taking Maya courses in the 2000s and learning Maya and late 90s. I was taking Maya classes, 3D modeling. And that's something that never sticks with me. That's not the type of thing that I'm like, I did it the first time. It was like climbing Mount Everest. Let me do it again. You know what? It was like climbing Mount Everest. I don't want to do it again. That's why I slowly petered away from 3D modeling. But to be able to make a 3D image like that so quickly in Vectrix, which is getting more and more advanced every single time you get a new version of Aspire, which is the 3D modeling version of Vectrix VCarve. Amazing. Just, it's amazing. And that, now I'm thinking, wow, it's a perfect way to incorporate the CNC machine with pottery. If I have a clear crystal image, there's a great graveyard nearby. I was going to walk through it and take pictures of tombstones. Some people are asking me, are you going to do all the tombstones in your graveyard, the tombstones in my graveyard, a lot of them are just tablets with very faint writing on them. They're all completely weathered to the point where you can't even read them. So there's just a couple in that one. But I mean, it's the idea of just interesting tombstones becoming tiles in general. And so I'm going to go to this other graveyard and see if I can't get clear pictures of some of the interesting ones there, and then see if I can't translate them into a tile with a few clicks of a button. And being able to look right away at an image and go, okay, that'll translate well. Oh, no, that won't translate well. That's too detailed. Especially the other thing, too, is the resolution at the size I'm going for. If I'm doing a 6-inch tile, the resolution is dictated by the tip of the cutting head and the offset of the overlap of the cut. So,
well, and the clay has to be able to squish into whatever that opening is.
Yeah, all those small details.
Yeah.
Huh. But it's been a learning experience, and not having the camera on is really nice to just breeze through it and just like, oh, what happens if I do this? Sometimes it's hard to tell that story of experimentation until you're done. You could talk about your net results versus trying to tell them in the moment. So you could always just do a photo montage and a quick recap versus trying to keep up with it each moment.
Yeah.
Funny, you mentioned the taking a photo and using the light and dark to create the texture. We, Jimmy and I, are doing some sort of CNC course coming up here fairly soon. And my course is based on taking a photo of a texture and then bringing that texture into Fusion so that you can then create a CNC texture of that. So I'm working on that stuff right now. So working off camera for me, I get to enjoy the process a little bit more. I get to really slow down and just be, I'm not performing. I'm not having to think about what to say. I'm not worried about camera angles and stuff. And so here in my office, I'll have a movie up on the second monitor, and I've been doing some like acrylic painting. Of some weird shapes. So this is just kind of like an abstract painting that I'm working on. And
that's cool.
It's so nice to just sit here, listen to music or watch a movie and just have fun. And I don't know if anybody's ever gonna see that, but it's like a thing that's just for me, and it's allows me to detach from everything all at once. So it is nice to work without cameras. But I also, there's also this little guilt in me, like this could be a video project. You're always looking for smaller, quicker video projects. You could do this. But
if you did try to make that into a video, it wouldn't be a smaller, quicker project. You would apply all this. But yeah, but it has to have this, and it has to be this, and I have to build out the, you know, yeah.
Yeah. And then you're like, oh, what's the value in this for somebody watching? Oh, I have to add a little bit of this or this to make it more interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad you're doing that. Not with the impulse to, I mean, not following through on the impulse to make it into a video. That's good for you as a person, as an artist, to fight that, you know, that's cool. I think back to like my granddad who was a dentist, and then at some point later in life, he picked up painting. I don't know how old he was when he started painting. He picked up painting and painted hundreds and hundreds of paintings, most of them landscapes, all over the country, all sorts of things that were real, things that were out of his head. And he just painted tons of them. And as far as I'm aware, never sold a single one. He would give paintings to anybody that asked. He would just like, you know, they're up in banks around here and churches and all sorts of places in this area where he would just like, here's a painting. I made this for you. I did this, whatever. So he started painting and just painted. And then at some point along the way, he decided to start carving, and he carved at least 200 birds.
That's amazing.
But we don't know exactly how many because he numbered some of them. And these are like three-dimensional, photorealistic, painted to match metal cast feet birds that are just crazy. And then at some point along in that process, he was like, oh, I should do fish too. And he did a small, like a handful of fish. I think it's like under 10 maybe, but they look like they're dripping wet every scale is carved and painted realistically, set in actual driftwood from a local lake kind of fish. And they are incredible. But he did all of that art for himself.
For himself.
He didn't sell any of it, and he gave it to people, and it wasn't because he wanted to be known for it. It wasn't because he wanted to do art shows. You know, like, I don't know. It's compulsion. It's hard for us, for me at least, to imagine in this day and age having something that's that big a part of your life that doesn't do anything for your livelihood, because we are all just in the position of like, it's got to serve me. It's got to like enable me. It's got to pay for itself. It's got to whatever, you know, and like we're all in the same place there. It's just how things are now, but it's hard to imagine somebody spending a great portion of their daily life, but a great portion of their life in years just making art because they wanted to make art, you know. It's awesome.
About 5 or 6 years ago, my grandpa introduced me to a couple of his friends. My grandpa and these two friends have since passed away, but the one guy, like, he took me over to his shop, and it was just the most. He didn't do woodworking for a living. He was retired, and this is just something he did at home. He turned his pole barn into this amazing, beautiful shop, and would just make these like blanket chests, and they were just phenomenal. He just made them for himself, or I think he gave some to his children and stuff too. And you know, no Facebook, no YouTube, no social media. He was so good at it, and it was just amazing to see. And then he takes me over to his other friend's house, and he, who is also a woodworker, he made every single piece of furniture in the house. His wife did scroll saw work, and so there's all these pieces of artwork of just scrolls, like just phenomenal. And like, there, I know there's a whole world of just absolutely amazing artists right around me that I don't know about, and nobody knows about, because they do it for themselves. And like you said, it's really hard to imagine spending that much time on something that's not part of my livelihood.
Yeah. But at the same time, like, what an amazing thing to do for your own life, to spend that amount of time on something that is for you, not for your livelihood, not for the money part of it, but for your life. Like, those are different things, right?
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know. That's awesome. I think it's so cool for people to be able to do that. I hope I can figure out how to do that. You know, I don't like the pressure of feeling like I have to justify wanting to do music, but you know, because I can, like, I can turn it into a thing, and like it can, I can make a channel out of it, or I can make, you know, whatever. I just
the three people that I mentioned, my grandfather and his two friends, they all lived to be, you know, very old. And I think one of the reasons they lived to be so old is because they always had something to do. They were working something. They didn't retire and then just sit around and do nothing.
Right.
They did fulfilling work that meant something to them. And I think that's really important.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think when you retire, maybe you'll get back into music and record a whole bunch of albums for yourself that nobody will hear.
Yeah, maybe. And that feels weird too. You think about that, like, especially with, I mean, art and music are the same in this, that it can be a performance medium, right? Like, even if you don't make any money on it, it's still, oftentimes music is made to be performed for other people so that they can enjoy it as well. Art is made to be shown for people so they can enjoy it as well. And so it is kind of weird to think about, like, what if you were to spend time making this performative thing that never got performed? You know, and you didn't try to sell it. You didn't try to make a streaming thing out of it. It was just like, it existed while you were doing it, and then it was gone forever. That's kind of weird to think about, but I guess that's how art has been for many, many years, you know, throughout the world. But anyway, any other thoughts on this? I know we didn't really have a topic, but
I'm looking forward to having more time to doing stuff that doesn't involve filming. That's just for me. But I mean, just like you said, I hope I can get there, because this acrylic painting that I've been working on, I actually haven't touched it in about 3 weeks, because I've just been so busy with obligations and I need to unbusy myself. And I'm trying to, but I just got to get over this little hump.
Yeah. I mean, everything is, you know, life is made of seasons. And there are seasons that are busy and full, and there are seasons that are looser, and that's when you can find times to do that art and music and whatever. I try to tell myself that because, you know, with like our kids being involved in a bunch of different things, it feels like it's nonstop. It feels like there's always a game to go to or a practice to go to or a person to take to a thing or whatever. But then when you kind of zoom out and look at it, there is a seasonality to how involved things are and how much, you know, life requires of me in a certain way over time. And being aware of that helps you see like, oh, well, this little season of the year or this season of my life is looser. And that's when I can take advantage of the fact that I have a little more time to be a certain way, to be in music or be in art or be athletic or whatever. And it's good to see that because you can't necessarily do that all the time. You know what I mean? If you try to make music your thing that you do every single, I'm speaking for myself. If I try to do that for myself every single day, then it becomes like work or like not interesting, you know, it needs to happen.
Routine.
Yeah, it's a routine. That's a good way to put it. It needs to happen in bursts or in seasons. So being aware of that as a condition of life lets you kind of fill in the gaps with what you need in any given time, in my
opinion. Well said.
But anyway. Cool. Anything else? Well, I want to thank our Patreon supporters who are awesome. And we're really, really grateful for all of them. And for supporting the show for so long, it really does matter. And I just want to say a big thanks to you all, especially the people that go above and beyond. That is Works by Solo, The New Janky Workshop, Scott at Daddy Yourself DIY, Rich at Low End Design, Pete Rondo, Odin Leather Goods, Nick Ryan, Chris McCormick, Chad from Mancrafting, Albers Woodworks, and A Pretty Big Deal, Inc. But also people like Terrence Archer. There's a lot of people that support us at all different levels, and everybody gets the after show, which is a separate podcast. You hear me talk about it all the time, but you only get it through Patreon. So go to patreon.com/makingit, sign up at any level to support us. And you get more show after the show. I've got an update on my thing that I said in the last show, after show, about the second engine I've killed in the second vehicle in the last few years.
Oh, no.
Sorry, dude.
Did you get it going? Did you fix it?
Well, I'll give you the update in the after show.
Okay.
I'll give you the update.
Yeah.
And in the after show, I'm going to ask you guys for advice on how to cut this thick piece of wood that I don't know how to cut.
Okay. Cool. Well, yeah, go check out Patreon if you are so inclined. And either way, thanks for listening. Do you guys have anything to recommend for this
week? I just went through my, I'm going to send it to you now. I talked about this a little bit here and there, but one thing I like to listen to in the background a lot is legal briefs. And I listen to people talk about, for instance, when people do arguments in front of the Supreme Court, lower courts, regional courts and district courts. I like to listen to these briefs. They're sometimes an hour long. So you hear the argument from the defense or whatever, or whoever. And that leads me to a lot of times you hear things and you're like, wait, what is that? What is the second article of the Fifth Amendment? And you go and you Google it. And this one little channel called Civics Minute, it talks all about the Constitution and all the various aspects of the legalese, and they're just a couple minutes long. And every once in a while, when I'm on a long drive, I'll just play what are the amendments, what are the Bill of Rights, or what are all the amendments to the Bill of Rights, and so on. And these type of channels, I think, are important because these are the type of things, unless you decide to become a lawyer, you don't get taught any of this stuff. You learn about the Constitution. Nobody reads any parts of it to you unless you want to become a lawyer. And the laws apply to everybody, whether you're a lawyer or not. So it's important to know what it's all about. So occasionally I just have this stuff playing in the background. And like I said, when you listen to a legal brief or an argument, really like an argument in front of a district court, all these little subtleties come up, and they reference a lot of case law, and they'll be like, you know, Turner versus Texas. And you're like, what the hell's that? And you quickly Google Turner versus Texas. You figure out what that is. And all these little interesting things. So that's my little tinfoil hat lawyer life of mine?
Mine is, so in my Make Something Discord, Brad from I'm Going to Make recommended a channel that I am going to recommend to you, and it's called Marta STL. It's looks like a fairly young channel, and they're just really well made, fun little maker videos. And she just needs more attention because
I've seen her
more
before.
What's that?
I've seen her before.
Yeah.
I watched one of her videos. I'm trying to remember which one it was. Cool.
I just subscribed.
Awesome. Let's see. For me, my brother sent me this right before we started recording this morning, and I've only watched about half the video, but it looks like a really cool thing. It's a new product. I don't even know if it's out yet because I haven't finished the video, but it's called Log, and it's a new lap steel and musical playground. So this is a folded steel lap steel guitar. Anybody doesn't know, a lap steel is like a guitar that you lay across your lap and people play it with a slide, and you'll know the sound of it as soon as you hear it because it's like country music has always used these. But the cool thing about this one is that the pickup in it that picks up the vibration of the strings is movable. So you can move the pickup down the neck and play on top of it, and you get a variety of sounds. And there's one shot where the guy actually picks up takes the pickup and puts it above the strings, and then by hand pushes it and pulls it back, which gives like a swell kind of sound. It's one of those instruments that like, well, not really. It's more of a, it has like a bow sound to it. I don't know. It's one of those instruments.
Now this looks cool.
That if I did any music at all, I would immediately order this because I would be able to play with the sounds of, you know, getting some interesting sounds out of it. Like 15 years ago, I would already have ordered this thing. But now I know better, and now I'm like, I wouldn't actually play it. I'm not actually going to, you know. So it looks cool.
Well, you could make one. I mean, it's true. A simple project. It's funny that the pickup is movable, because when I built my last electric guitar, I only put one pickup in there because I only use one pickup in my guitar, and I'd never use the tone knob. So, and my volume knob, I only use it to turn it all the way down or all the way up. So the guitar I made just had an on-off switch and one pickup. It's what you got is what you got. But while making the guitar, I thought, what if I could slide the pickup up and down so I could have, and I was like, this is brilliant. I'm a genius. And I go and look it up, and there's already guitars where the pickup slides up and down. I'm like, dang it. That was my idea.
As soon as you started saying that, I started Googling to see if that was a thing, and it is, but
yeah,
it's a really cool idea. It would be interesting to play with. Huh. Yeah. So go check that out. You guys got anything else for this week?
That's it.
Yeah. All right, cool. Thanks for listening, everybody, and being with us, and we'll catch you next time.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.